The pro-vaxxers, as I call them, deny that vaccines can cause problems, even though governments have paid out billions of dollars of taxpayers' money in compensation to previously healthy people who were made ill or killed by vaccines. In the UK, the NHS helpfully lists the side effects which might occur with the flu vaccine. They say that flu vaccines are very safe, and the side effects they list are muscle aches, a slightly raised temperature, and a sore arm where the needle went in. They do say that very rarely individuals may have an anaphylactic shock reaction, though they forget to mention that this can kill you. And don't worry, they say, the people who vaccinate you will be trained to deal with allergic reactions. Well, yes, it won't just be a junior nurse or care assistant then, or a soldier. Maybe the AA man giving your injection. I don't see nausea and headaches on the list, though they are listed on the CDC site in America. Oddly, the NHS also seems to say that none of the flu vaccines contains live viruses, so they can't give you the flu. They worry a lot about that, the pro-vaxxers. There are, incidentally, before I go on, very few or no anti-vaxxers, though the drug company spokespersons like to pretend that there are. There are, on the one hand, the people like me who like to examine medical issues according to the facts, and there are the pro-vaxxers who accept what the drug companies tell them. A good number of pro-vaxxers are actually linked to the drug industry, and not a few receive money from it. The rest, I'm afraid, are just woefully ignorant simpletons. By drug industry, by the way, I'm referring not to the dealers who market Colombian marching powder, but to the international companies which make legal prescription drugs, which are responsible for far more addicts, illnesses, and deaths. We should, of course, remember that the nasal vaccine, the one given to children, contains attenuated or weakened live viruses. This is where we get back to, can the vaccine give you the flu? It's possible that a child who has a weakened immune system, as might be the case if they'd been imprisoned or kept indoors a lot or had for no any good reason been wearing a mask for a long time, then a vaccine virus might conceivably cause the flu. And because attenuated viruses aren't quite dead, they could change or become live, and they could mutate, and they could result in other people being infected. So it is possible that if a child has the nasal flu vaccine, they could transmit the flu virus to granny, who might die as a result. That's the sort of warning governments like to give these days, so I thought I ought to follow their example. I've dealt with the nasal flu vaccine in a previous video, but at the moment I'm more interested in the injected vaccine, because the NHS's official list of flu vaccine side effects, as presented to reassure patients, seems a little bit on the skimpy side to me. So here, in contrast, is the official list of side effects for one flu vaccine. This list is intended for the use of health professionals. Some of these side effects will be commoner than others, of course, but if you get a side effect, it doesn't terribly much matter if it's common or not. If I'd wanted to be sly in a politician sort of way, I could perhaps have found the side effects from half a dozen flu vaccines. And since the lists wouldn't have been the same, I'd have had a longer list. But I'm not a politician, I'm pleased to say. So here's the list of some of the possible side effects with just one flu vaccine taken at random. I've made my list alphabetical, since that's a reasonably traditional and fair thing to do. Obviously not something the BBC would even consider. First, allergy reactions, including anaphylactic shock, which can kill, of course. So that's not one you want, because it would be a real disappointment to be perfectly healthy, have a flu jab and then die. I've had an anaphylactic shock reaction and it was no fun at all. Definitely not recommended. No one really knows how common it is, but it's a fair guess that several hundred people a year have them as a result of vaccinations. Next on the list, arthralgia, pain in your joints. Asthenia, lack of energy and weakness. Convulsions, definitely not something you want. Diarrhea, messy but probably won't kill you. ecchymosis, that's a bruise, encephalomyelitis, inflammation of the brain and spinal cord, you don't want that one. Erythema multiforme, fatigue, fever, Guillain-Barré syndrome, which can cause paralysis, so that's really one you want to avoid. Headache, induration, that's hardening, influenza-type illness, how odd. Malaise, myalgia, pain in the muscles, nausea, neuralgia. These, by the way, are all the side effects listed for the knowledge of health professionals with one flu vaccine. Where was I? Neuralgia, neuritis, pain, paresthesia, pruritus, rash, redness, shivering, sweating, swelling, syncope, loss of consciousness. Not a lot of fun if you're a steeplejack, bus driver, or almost anything. Tenderness at injection site. Thrombocytopenia, that's a blood disorder which you definitely don't want. Urticaria, vasculitis, which may be associated with transient renal involvement. Renal, of course, is kidneys, so that's not a good one to have. And vomiting, which, like diarrhea, can be very messy. Those are the side effects listed as being associated with one particular flu vaccine, but I'm not allowed to tell you about those because the list is only really available for health professionals who are considered better able to deal with them. So I shouldn't have told you about those side effects, so forget I did, or I'll probably be in trouble again. And of course, this list isn't complete because it's always possible that additional problems may develop a year or more later, 5 years, 10 years, and some side effects, particularly the rare ones, may not be recorded, even if they're deadly. And the upside of the flu vaccine? Well, there's a chance that the vaccine may lower your chances of getting the flu. No guarantee, of course. Some flu jabs don't work terribly well at all. In a good year, the vaccine can reduce your risk of needing to see the doctor with the flu by between 40 and 60%. In other years, the effectiveness is much lower than that. That's the truth, according to the CDC in America. And the flu vaccine can sometimes be effective in just 14% of patients. So 6 out of 7 patients take all those risks for absolutely no benefit. But the pro-vaxxers, who find truth rather uncomfortable and not quite to their taste, it seems to me, may forget to tell you any of that. A lot of pro-vaxxers aren't very good at science and are pretty crappy when it comes to facts. And now, here's a confession for which I am grateful to Richie Allen, the host of the Richie Allen radio show, the best wireless experience since Radio Caroline ruled the airwaves in the 1960s. On the 23rd of September 2020, on a BBC programme called Radio 5 Live, which I confess I've never listened to and which probably has 3 listeners, someone called Emma Barnett said something quite extraordinary. And I have here a recording. If I know what to press. Let's try
we
that.
We actually don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that.
I'll play it once more because it's absolutely staggering.
We actually don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that.
You noticed, of course, Ms. Barnett's words, right or wrong. Only if you'd never done any research could you think that this policy is a good one. The world of vaccination can really be divided into 2 groups. The pro-vaxxers, who are blind to the truth and keen to suppress it because it's inconvenient or uncomfortable, and the truth seekers, who are open-minded and who possess scientific curiosity. Now, Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, has described us truth seekers as nuts. And since that comes from a man who's proved himself to me to be an imbecile in that he appears to have deliberately rejected the real scientific evidence about COVID, a traitor in that he appears to have betrayed the people he's paid to look after and Britain's first self-appointed dictator, that can probably be regarded as a compliment. I've never heard of this Emma, the one who you just heard. Indeed, the only Emma I was previously aware of was Emma Hamilton, who was the mistress of Lord Nelson and who died in 1815. though I don't suppose being dead would prevent her having a job at the BBC. Indeed, it might be considered an advantage. What qualifications do you need for a job like this on Radio 5 Live? O-level arrogance? Ability to make a nice cup of tea? Where do they find people prepared to take a job with these strictures? Do they import them, give them a bag of chips and point them at a microphone? I have no idea. Anyway, that's what young Emma had to say about the BBC's attitude towards the truth about the vaccines on the BBC. I'm quoting it because I suspect that no one except Guardian readers and Bill and Melinda Gates listen to anything on the BBC. It's a cultural backwater which has been stagnant for decades. So there we are. The BBC, paid for with our money, well, not actually mine because I don't give them any, but paid for with our money, generally speaking, seems to be deliberately and openly suppressing the scientific truths about vaccines. Emma also almost seems proud of it. "We don't do that," she said. "We don't do that." She talks about it as though she's talking about not spitting on the pavement or shoplifting or passing wind in public. It's as though she feels the corporation's prejudice and anti-scientific approach gives her the right to assume the moral high ground. My fear, of course, is that many people may die as a result of the BBC policy. If the pro-vax argument goes unquestioned, then problems may never be solved. Thousands of people are seriously and often permanently injured because vaccines are not properly tested or because drug companies hide evidence. I wonder if little Emma understands what transverse myelitis involves. I wonder if she understands any of those things on the list I gave. Or does she understand how parents feel when a perfectly healthy child has a vaccination which leaves them permanently brain damaged? One life lost and two lives permanently scarred. I wonder if she understands that governments promote vaccination for economic reasons, not health reasons. Does she have any idea how much vaccine companies cheat and lie? The policy of a blanket ban on those who question vaccination means that any who fight for the truth will be dismissed not as truth seekers, but as anti-vaxxers. To me, Emma seems utterly hubristic and at the same time shamelessly pathetic. And the organisation employing her is worse. There's an arrogance, an assumption at the BBC that the people who question vaccination and who argue that there are risks which may exceed the benefits are lunatics. They seem to believe that the science has been sorted in favour of vaccination. But that is wrong and narrow-minded. My first book, which was published in 1975, was called The Medicine Men, and it was about the way the damage the drug industry often does and the way it's literally bought huge parts of the medical establishment. The BBC at the time thought The Medicine Men was so important that they gave the book a 15-20 minute segment on their main news programme. The Guardian newspaper serialised the book. That was in the 1970s, and my, how things change. How did the BBC suddenly know better than the science? Who told them that vaccines are so good that there's no need to debate their value, their safety, or their effectiveness? I bet you there's a drug company or a drug company spokesman lurking somewhere. I don't think witty Valance and Hancock will debate with me in the UK, even though I've written extensively about these things for decades, because they know they'll look foolish. I can prove that vaccines kill and injure and often don't work at all. The BBC's unjustifiable arrogance rather explains why the BBC, despite constantly harassing me to pay their licence fee so that they can add it to the loot from Bill Gates, won't now invite me to discuss vaccination on any of its programmes. But why won't the BBC bosses allow criticism of vaccination on its airwaves? Could it possibly be because the BBC knows damn well that any moderately competent doctor who knows the scientific truths about vaccine safety and effectiveness could utterly destroy the BBC's stale, cosy, and entirely fake pro-vax arguments live on air? Or could it be that the bean counters at the BBC are frightened that this might upset the BBC's cosy relationship with arch pro-vaxxers, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? And why do staff such as Emma Barnett allow this to happen? Whatever happened to editorial integrity and independence? Have BBC staff sold their integrity and honour for big fat salaries, perhaps? Is this why BBC staff tend to be very highly paid? Is it vanity? Get your picture in the Radio Times and a chance to sidle up and get Gary Lineker's autograph in the staff canteen. Half asleep, I could shred the pro-vax arguments and leave them beyond repair. I'm not what the BBC might call an anti-vaxxer, but I can prove that some of the companies making vaccines have been found guilty of fraud and bribery. I can prove that billions of dollars have been paid out in compensation to people injured by vaccines. But maybe little Emma and her colleagues aren't interested in any of those uncomfortable truths which relate to real people, science and real death. I think that decent broadcasters would walk away from an organisation which has such oppressive policies, out of tune with an obligation to the public. The BBC is now a propaganda department for, among others, the powerful, rich and fraudulent vaccine industry. Did they cover the importance of morality and ethics when you studied broadcasting, Emma? Why does the BBC feel the need to have such outrageous prejudices? Who makes up the BBC's biased, prejudiced and bigoted policies? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, perhaps? What an utter disgrace this organisation is. It exists to educate and inform the public. It's surely supposed to be fair and unbiased. Lord Reith would weep. Many BBC presenters probably don't know who the hell he was, but he'd weep. He'd weep. He is identified with the BBC's aims to educate, inform and entertain. In my view, if you deliberately suppress scientific truths that would be inconvenient to one of your financial partners, then you deserve all the opprobrium that's available. You may have heard that one of the volunteers in the AstraZeneca trial suffered from transverse myelitis, a rare and potentially serious disease that can cause paralysis. Well, now I hear that a second volunteer has allegedly fallen ill, apparently another case of transverse myelitis. This isn't all that surprising, but that's two serious problems in just 18,000 volunteers so far. The British authorities apparently allowed trials to continue, but trials were stopped in the US, and AstraZeneca is reputed to be already making billions of doses of this rubbish. Sorry, this vaccine. But wait, stop the presses. AstraZeneca says in an internal document that the two cases were, and I quote, unlikely to be associated with the vaccine, or there was insufficient evidence to say for certain that the illnesses were or were not related to the vaccine. So, according to AstraZeneca, it's just an unlucky coincidence that two of their guinea pigs happened to develop exactly the same rare disease at almost exactly the same time. And that was handy because the halt in the trial had resulted in the share price of AstraZeneca falling by $11.3 billion. And although the pro-vaxxers insist that this was all just a coincidence, the fact is that transverse myelitis is one of the top vaccine injuries for which patients receive compensation. The total at the moment in the USA is apparently around $150 million in damages. That's just for transverse myelitis. And it's a nasty disease, Emma. The symptoms can include pain, muscle weakness, bladder and bowel problems and paralysis. And tragically, two-thirds of those who have transverse myelitis remain permanently damaged. We don't debate with anti-vaxxers. It's not what we do, says Emma. Apart from apparently being very unlucky, what sort of company is AstraZeneca? The BBC wouldn't let me on their airwaves to tell you this, but in 2014, AstraZeneca agreed to pay $110 million to settle two lawsuits brought by the state of Texas, claiming that it had fraudulently marketed two drugs. AstraZeneca has paid out hundreds of millions of dollars to resolve thousands of lawsuits, and it's been charged with illegal marketing, including corrupt data in studies for marketing a drug to children, a sex scandal, and a poorly run clinical trial that could have compromised patient safety and data reliability. Studies which showed that a drug produced harmful results were never published and were covered up. A company email revealed, quotes, "Thus far we have buried trials 15, 31, 56. The larger issue is, how do we face the outside world when they begin to criticize us for suppressing data," close quotes. After years of investigations, AstraZeneca paid a $520 million fine in the US and paid $647 million to settle global lawsuits. These are the people the government and the BBC want us to trust. Could the BBC be legally responsible when people who have been denied the truth fall ill? Surely the BBC has a legal responsibility to provide both sides of a scientific discussion with a voice. The World Health Organization, the private health office of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, says AstraZeneca is the leading candidate for the billions in profit that lie ahead. So that's all right then. Oh, and other drug companies are, as I warned they would be, playing around with a DNA RNA flu vaccine. But somehow, I doubt if you'll hear about the dangers of that on the BBC, which doesn't seem to give a stuff for the health of the British public. Please, viewers, I beg you, do not ever give the BBC a penny of your money again. They've been losing listeners and viewers for years. Don't do anything illegal, but let's speed up the demise of the BBC. The BBC is a self-confessed biased organisation, and I don't think it's a stretch to describe it as corrupt. Why do I say that? Well, the BBC apparently refuses to allow presenters to discuss the downside of vaccination. It is deliberately and knowingly refusing to allow any debate on an issue which affects the health and possibly life of everyone. And the BBC has financial links with the world's arch vaxxers, pro-vaxxers, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Corruption is defined as fraudulent conduct by those in power, often involving money. So you decide. The BBC deliberately and cold-bloodedly suppresses the truth about vaccines because the pro-vaxxers aren't going to tell you about the dangers, and has financial links with people promoting vaccines. Is that corruption? The sooner we get rid of the BBC, the safer and healthier we'll all be. If you believe that the BBC is corrupt, then anyone who gives money to the BBC is surely guilty of supporting and funding corrupt activities. People who support criminals can be charged. Why can't the BBC and its staff be charged? Please make sure that everyone you know, and even those you don't know, watches this video with the clip of little Emma letting the cat out of the bag. The whoopsie of the year, perchance. And congratulations to my friend Richie Allen for catching it on his machine. Send a copy of this video to your MP and demand that he or she votes to defund this terrible organisation. Send copies to everyone at the BBC who tweets or has a Facebook account. Swamp the self-satisfied smug bastards with some simple truths, and send leaflets on vaccination based on the lists on my website to every politician, every BBC presenter, and every pro-vaxxer. Remember, anyone who is a pro-vaxxer is an ignorant, deluded, and dangerous fool. Oh, and that's not all. There's one more little scandal that I doubt if young Emma, her colleagues, and the prejudiced oafs at the BBC would want to trouble you with. For months, I've been pointing out that Patrick Vallance, Britain's chief scientific advisor, used to work for GlaxoSmithKline, a huge drug company which is in the running to make a vaccine, for which I'm told it's planning to charge the EU around €10 a pop. If they got the deal for all 7 billion people on the planet, that would be €70 billion. And of course, some people want us all to have vaccines every 3 months or so. So that's 280 billion euros a year forever. And then there'll be probably be another 280 billion euros for flu vaccines. And oh boy, soon you're talking real money and Bill Gates will be frothing at the mouth in anticipation. By the way, you can read all about GlaxoSmithKline on my website. What a company. In medical terms, they are what we call in the medical profession a steaming pile of the stuff out that you get out of the exhaust pipe of a horse. There's material for information leaflets, by the way, on www.vernoncolman.com. I said previously that I'd be very surprised if Valence didn't still have financial links to GSK. Well, guess what? He does. Valence, the British government's chief scientific advisor, is reported to have £600,000 worth of shares in GSK, a big vaccine manufacturer. And no one in the British government, or indeed Her Majesty's opposition, if there is still one anywhere, seems to think that this is wrong. Though it seems to me to be very iffy. I'd be upset if I found that an advisor in the Ministry of Defence had shares in a particular tank or bomb manufacturer, or if a local council planning officer had links with a particular builder. But perhaps I'm just a bit old-fashioned about these things. Old-fashioned values don't seem to be much prized in public life these days. How much longer are we going to put up with this? We can win this war, but we have to take the attack to the traitors. And thankfully, there's more and more great stuff appearing online. Another doctor, enraged by the nonsense spouted by governments and their advisers, has started on brand new tube. His name is Dr. Colin M. Barron, and I've mentioned him before in these videos. He's now recorded his first video. It's entitled, Why I Support Anti-Lockdown Protests, and it's well worth watching. Calm, cool, and very clinical, he cuts the lockdown policy to ribbons without breaking a sweat. Great stuff, my friend, and I'm delighted to see that more doctors are joining brand new tube, which is rapidly acquiring a medical colony. Please make more videos, doctors, then I can retire and go back to writing books. I'm serious. And print out leaflets, dear viewers, and share them. Go to my website, find the health button, press it, and lo and behold, the material from which to build your own leaflets will lie before you. And make sure that every living person you can reach sees this video. Thank you for watching An Old Man in a Chair, and thank you for all your support, encouragement and kind comments. Please copy and share the videos on Facebook and Twitter. Let's spread the truth. If you'd like to put on a translation, that would be great. This channel, brand new tube, hasn't been monetized, nor will it ever be. This is a public service channel in the old-fashioned way. Please go to www.vernoncolman.com. where you can find transcripts, including transcripts of all the videos banned by Screw YouTube. There are many other articles too, and there are lists, as I've said, to turn into leaflets to print out and distribute to friends, neighbours and strangers. The website's got no ads and no sponsors. If you'd like to see more videos from me, then please subscribe to my brand new YouTube channel. If you visit mainstream media, please put on messages asking readers to watch these videos to find the truth. Put the messages on the bottom of general news items rather than anything to do with the coronavirus, and the papers are probably less likely to find them and take them down. In addition to continuing my video series and updating the website, I'm also appearing on The Richie Allen Show every Monday at 5:30 p.m. UK time until Richie throws me off, probably next week. Although it may feel like it at times, please remember you're not on your own. More and more people are waking up. They really are. And once they've woken up, they won't go back to sleep. Remember, together, we can and will win this war. You're not on your own. Thank you for watching An Old Man in a Chair.